Take it.
All right, welcome to another episode of the Mercy Metrics Podcast here at TigersHomeReport.com. I'm Rogelio Castillo, and Samus Chris Brown and Youper. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts, and over on Twitter at TigersHomeReport and MC Metrics Pod. As again, we're hoping we can, if hopefully Cameron, if you're listening out there, hopefully everything's okay. We haven't heard from Cameron in a while, and he runs our show account, and we haven't just had not a chance to update the account, but we'll get some more activity out there on there. So, well, a couple programming notes for this evening. I am going to go behind the scenes this evening. I'm going to be off camera because I just got back from Toronto. I've watched a little bit of baseball. I watched the Tigers quite a bit, but I have some projects I have to finish up. But we are doing our program. We are going to be doing our MLB show on Sunday, July 14th at 7 o'clock. So there'll be details on that. There's going to be a promo coming up for that and more. And we also got some Patreon stuff we're working on, the books that Jerry's working on. Jerry's working on a really cool app, too. And I'm guilty of not promoting this enough. Please go to our store, the Tigers ML Report. If you want to buy a shirt, promote the podcast, it'll go a long way. We also have bumper stickers, too, as well. On that note, though, what's up?
Were you stopped by Border Patrol for illicit maple syrup coming back into the country today?
No, I did. I wanted to bring back some ketchup chips or some all of the all dressed chips, but that didn't happen. So I understand people, the idea of ketchup chips sounds disgusting to some people, but they are delicious. So
I've never tried them.
I'd give it a shot.
Yeah. Oh yeah, they're really good. All dressed chips are even better. There's like
I've had nice all dressed.
Are they great?
Yeah, they're good.
Yeah, they're very good.
Everything.
Yeah, a little bit of flavor to it. But so whenever the guys cue a segment, I'll be doing stuff in behind the scenes. But yeah, so at any rate, we had our guest. Oh, don't forget to check out the Minor League Podcast. We had Sam Lovitz, the voice of the Erie Sea Wolves, with us. Did a really good job. Long segment. A little longer segment than we anticipated. Check it out on the website. So without further ado, gentlemen, take it away.
Well, yeah. All right. So we've got... we've got a frustrating week of Tigers baseball to recap here, don't we? Yes. I guess last we spoke, we were heading into the Brewer series, which Raj and I talked about and with Brandon a fair amount there on that on the minor league show last week. But that was kind of a demoralizing one. A couple of really bad games, and then Scooble comes and saves the day, and they have the sort of blowout victory that has been few and far between this year.
And then
another very frustrating series against the Washington Nationals, who seem to get back to being a 500 team far faster than it seems fair or allowable, given how long it's taken the Tigers to get kind of there. But again, you win the third game to avoid a sweep. It's a 2-4 week, but it's not exactly encouraging.
Yeah, it didn't feel 2-4. It felt about 2-9. You know, I mean, it's just kind of the feeling through the whole week was just. You know, demoralizing is the right word. There was just a lot of ugliness. Mr. Papchak is here.
Yeah, we welcome in Mike Papchak.
Oh, join us. Sorry, I was having some issues. I think I saw something about Diamond Sports coming up with my webcam. I had to work something out, but I got to figure it out.
Oh, interesting. Raj is working behind the scenes tonight. He's back there lurking, but he's got some other things going on. So we're kind of guiding the show here today. Just started, and it's I don't know. I don't know where we want to begin. It's I don't know. It's been kind of an ugly couple weeks of baseball, I would say. That's the best way I can describe it. Just not a lot of clean. You know, I think earlier in the year we kept talking, you know, the pitching was good, the defense was solid, and we're like, just got to get those bats turning around. And then what has happened is kind of the pitching and the defense has gone back to where the bats were.
That's about the right way to say it. The offense, to me, you know, they've just reached that point where Torkelson last year was a 30 home run guy. You thought you'd get at least some semblance of that this year. Whether you like the guy or don't like the guy, you figured something would come out of that spot. Well, they got nothing out of that spot. We have Carpenter out. And, you know, that took so much of any hint of looming danger in the lineup. We went on the IL with him. You have Riley Green, who's kind of having a mediocre year. We had, you know, last year, he had a month where he had a solid 400 on base percentage, anything like that, really, since early in the season. So the offense, to me, is I think we knew the pitching would be okay, but the bullpen might be up and down. I really thought the offense here would take a step forward, and we just haven't seen it. And really, because there's just no danger lurking anywhere.
Yeah, you know, I was digging into Riley Green a little bit more, looking through his numbers, just because, you know, it's been, I mean, it feels like he's played a lot more than he has. He's at like 260 career games at this point. And so I was going through and looking at similar players in Tigers history, you know, performance-wise to Riley Green, mm-hmm. through this relative age at game time. And his OPS is right between Ty Cobb and Lou Whitaker. So I think it's important to remember that young players sometimes take a while to get good. And when I was looking at Lou Whitaker, I actually, you know, Lou Whitaker won Rookie of the Year, right? But it wasn't like, I mean, it's not like he hit 30 home runs or anything like that. He was just a really good all-around player. And I think it was Lou Whitaker's third full season where he just completely fell off the map. Just a terrible third season. And then came back and was very good. I don't know. It's baseball. Sometimes strange things happen. You have to get, and we all want that superstar, that the kid who takes the Bobby Witt Jr. leap, right, and just becomes an MVP talent. You can count on year in, year out. And even then, it doesn't necessarily happen. You know, we've seen guys like Francisco Lindor was like a MVP candidate every year. And then every now and then, like, you know, he kind of falls off a little bit. But it's tough. It's tough when you're counting on these guys to be the core of your team. And they're going through those growing pains. Some of them are a lot more painful than others. Like Torkelson's having feelings down in Toledo. And so is Parker Meadows. And Riley Green is streaking through his, you know, second and a half big league season. But nobody wants to hear that, right? Like you just want these guys to perform and you want to win. And it's just I think we don't have the benefit right now of being able to go ahead 20 years and look back at his career and say, oh, that's just a blip, or, oh, this is who he is.
Right.
I mean, statistically, Riley Green's, I mean, yeah, his batting average might be a little bit lower, but he's statistically having the best season of his career in a lot of ways. So, again, like I brought this up, I feel like, in the show's past. If this is a subpar Riley Green season, then we got a damn good player, and I'm pumped about it, you know?
Yeah. I mean, and we've talked about it before. I think there's a like I had a tweet several years ago, and like, you know, would you guys be okay with a scenario? And it was like Spencer Torkelson as Rhys Hoskins, Riley Green as Nick Castellanos, and Dylan Dingler as, I don't remember who it was. It was James McCann, right? And then, you know, because people were like, nah, no way. But, you know, Castellanos, if Riley Green is Nick Castellanos, first of all, he's going to be a better defender in the outfield. We know that.
Sure.
That's a 10, 12-year big leaguer at least. Like, that's a very good player to have. You need more of them. That's the problem. And so when there aren't more of them, you kind of just go, well, it's your fault. Yeah, like, it without Carpenter in there, without Torque doing anything, you just kind of, you're relying on one guy to do it all, and not everybody can do that.
Well, and Wencel Perez has it looks like he's adjusting, and pitchers have started to learn how to pitch to him a little bit more. So he's right around major league average now after his hot start coming back. So I think it's a lot of regression, really. I feel like Riley Green's he's going the opposite way. I just looked in his last 14 games, he's doing really well, but I think Wencel Perez is just kind of regressing back to the mean, and you kind of always expect this to happen with young players, especially guys like Perez, who really wasn't, I mean, he wasn't like a number one prospect kind of guy. So I think seeing if he'll figure it out, I think that I wasn't going to bring this up too, but I'm kind of beating around the bush with it. I think that this is what Scott Harris meant when he said that we're going to let the young guys play. And I really think, and this is kind of what I thought, this is what they did with Andre Lipschitz last year when they brought him up at the end of the year. They're just trying to see what they have right now. I genuinely think that Scott Harris is just trying to see what he's got. He's seeing if anybody on this 40-man is worth committing to. And that's why, even though Perez, like, he's going to keep moving down the order, he's batting seventh now, I think, most commonly. But You're going to see a lot of guys start to struggle, and seeing how they bounce back or how they don't, like Torque, is really we're looking towards the future with these kinds of things.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot of that. We're now in the process of kind of getting a feel for what Justin Hunter-Malloy can do in the big leagues. Yeah. And, you know, it's been up and down, but it certainly had his best game of the season today with it's a home run and a double. Not bad. And I think as Stan mentioned earlier, he said, I'm very impressed that Justin Hunter-Malloy has hit 95 miles an hour, four-seam fastball, something Torque hasn't done all year. Should I have enthusiasm for J-Him that I have? You know, I mean, that's certainly a good place to start, right? If you're going to do damage on the fastballs, they're going to have to, you're going to force pitchers off their easiest thing to do, right? And it's just a matter, he's going to get, and we saw this in AAA, the numbers bear it out. Like, he's going to get a pretty heavy diet of breaking balls, and he's not necessarily bad against breaking balls. There's just more swing and miss in the zone. And what he has to do is he has to punish the mistakes that they make, which is, again, something that we didn't see Torkelson do. But if Malloy can do that enough, there's enough thump in the bat and enough you know, on-base ability that he could be kind of the de facto Torkelson that we thought we were getting. I don't think he's ever going to be a 30-home run guy, but 20, 25 home runs maybe with 150 games and 10 to 15% walk rate is possible, and that would be acceptable.
Yeah, no question. 20 homers and a you know, very solid on-base percentage, and you got yourself a ball player there. What I've liked so far, you know, it's obviously we're in a small sample, but they did talk about, you know, balls in the zone, what major league pitchers could do to him. I haven't seen it really. I don't think he's looked overmatched by any stretch. He's taken a big aggressive hack when he does. He lays off a lot of pitches, which is what we, you know, we saw in the minors. I like it. I'm very encouraged. I hope he can keep this up throughout the summer. I'm sure there'll be, you know, ups and downs as it goes, just like Perez is having. But now the question is he a DH, or are they going to keep trying to find him time in the outfield and see what they have out there?
Yeah, you know, it's tough. He looked pretty rough the other day on the and not necessarily like even – like he wasn't like tripping over his feet or anything like that. He's just not terribly quick. The actions aren't terribly quick. And it's a little bit reminiscent of Colt Keith at second base, where it's like, okay, they know what to do for the most part. They can get there. It's just like, it's not that quick twitch athleticism that you want to see from your defenders. You know, we also, you know, Kerry Carpenter came up with a reputation as a pretty bad defender. He wasn't terribly good right away. And he certainly improved his defense. I think he's a step or two faster than Malloy, if not more. But, you know, once you get in the big leagues, you're getting George Lombard every day. I think he'll improve a little bit, and he could be passable enough to put in an outfield corner, really. I mean, you're not going to make that many key plays in a game. But I do think, I don't know if we mentioned it. I think we mentioned it last week in the Torque section. what we would do in the offseason is I do think we will see later on that the Tigers kind of cycle through some more options at first base, and Malloy could be one of them. I think he played a game or two at first base early on at Vanderbilt. I mean, just doesn't really tell you much of anything, but, you know, I think it's possible.
Well, he wouldn't be the first guy to make, you know, first base is the landing spot. It makes a lot of sense. I just have a hard time believing we've seen the last of a run of Spencer Torkelson.
I think, you know, one of the other, and this is a foreshadowing a little bit to one of my segments later, is one of the other things to consider is that there might be several other potential first basemen on this roster that you need to move. You know, it's, you know, Colt Keith may have to play first base sooner or later. Chase Young, we talked about, you know, maybe he goes to first base. Maybe you can move him to second if Keith goes to first. So they've got some figuring out to do. But, yeah, it certainly would be nice if Malloy can continue playing like this as a right-handed hitter with some thumping on base ability. That's really going to, you know, he'll move up in the lineup. But, again, we've, you know, young players, they get tested, they get exposed, they have to adjust. We have to wait for all that before we really say anything. But he's going to keep playing, so that's fun. That's what people wanted for a long time. People also wanted. This was something that frustrated me the other day, and I get it. you know, everybody's running thin on patience because it's been forever since the Tigers have had a quality team. But, you know, people for, what, I don't know, a year and a half now want to ship Javi Baez off to Paraguay and not insure the package. And so he goes out and they're asking, let's get Kreidler up here. Kreidler plays one game and they're like, he's a bum. Because, you know, I think he walked and struck out and then he made a very key error.
Yeah.
And that was the most frustrating, you know, that game. Tigers had a great chance to win that, and then just back-to-back errors by Green and Kreidler, and they blow it. And it's so frustrating to see a game like that because that's, you know, we've talked all year. The offense isn't powerful enough to overcome mistakes like that, and that they just threw that one away.
I was going to talk about that under my bad, which is fine. Oh. But no, the exact same sequence you talked about, you know, and that's precisely the best way to put it. When your offense is so limited and there's so many dead spots in the order, two things have to happen. You have to button up in defense and not give up any ugly runs like that. And you have to take advantage of the small chances you have offensively. And that's where I was talking with some people about a bases loaded sac fly does nothing for me. I've always thought that's kind of a neutral event because you got a run, that's nice, but you scuttled the rally, really, with the out quite often, you know. Bases loaded, you need a gapper, you need a home run, you need at least a single to keep the thing moving. But yes, Kreidler, I'm happy to see him back. I like the guy. I saw him play here when he was having that one good year in Toledo before the hand injury started. I think we saw today some of his value. I mean, someone made the good point where if he's just a replacement level player, that's a hell of a lot more than they were getting from Baez. So that's a bonus right there. But he made a couple of very, very noteworthy base running decisions today, which were positives, helped score runs. He got on base via the bunt. He got on base with a soft line drive. If he can continue to just chip in and then play the normal defense that they've seen from him, I think he can get a lot of playing time this summer. And I would much rather watch him than Zach McKinstry.
Yeah, and I think maybe to Mike's point, and you may want to elaborate a little bit more, but that's another kind of sign of like, yeah, just feeling out what they have. Playing the kids when they can. And the kids, like Kreidler's like 26 now, but like it's not his fault. Like that's the one thing I try to remind people is, and you just touched on it, Kreidler, it's in some ways, that's not the right way to say it, but he was kind of the original Cary Carpenter, where he was not thought of as being a whole heck of a lot, and then went straight to AA. And then he came up to Toledo with Torkelson and Green. They all came up together,
yep.
And he arguably outperformed them. I mean, he was right there with Riley. Right, I'm looking right now. So, you know, it's 160 plate appearances or whatever, and it's AAA. So, you know, and we've seen what that is. But he had a 147 WRC plus and 162 plate appearances in Toledo.
Yep.
After coming up, hit 304 with power compared to Torkelson, who was 129. So it was there. It's AAA, but he hasn't come anywhere close to any of that since. And I think a lot of it has to do with constant injuries. And again, they weren't injuries. They were just freak injuries. It's kind of like the Matt Manning of hand injuries for a batter, yeah. Like just kept getting hit.
Hit by pitches. And people underestimate, you know, they don't look like dramatic injuries, right? Oh, he busted his hand. Okay. Boy, that just seems to sap power like nobody's business. You know, especially when you have had multiple fractures on that hand, because it's been the same hand each time. So, who knows? Will it come back? It'd be a hell of a development if it did.
And then, so that there was one other thing I wanted to touch on. Yesterday was kind of a frustrating game. That would be Wednesday, mm-hmm. because the Tigers' top six in the order had like 11 hits, and that, like, I don't know, you when you look at the top of the order and you see that much production, you think, okay, they should win this game, and they did score five runs, but again, kind of blew it late. And the thing I wanted to bring up is you know, this is three straight rough outings from Reese Olson, and I don't know, do you guys are either of you concerned about this?
I tried to be. I have to be honest with you. I was going to talk about Reese Olson a little later, and I still will. Right. But I went into my research expecting to see some troubling trends. But I think it's going to be the theme of what I'm talking about with everything I've brought up, it's just, I think, a little bit of a regression to the mean. He's not a two ERA pitcher. Like, that's okay. He's not going to keep, wasn't going to keep pitching like those first 10 starts. Those first 10 starts, he has that ability in him. He can do something like that for 10 starts, and that's incredible. You need guys like that in your start, in your starting staff. But the last three games are exactly why he's not a number one starter. And that's, again, I'm going to keep repeating myself. That's okay. It really is. Like, it's going to average out, and he's going to have a totally fine year still. I don't think I'm worried, and I can get more into specifics a little later, but I didn't see anything. The only other thing that I really noticed is I don't think he allowed a single home run in his first 10 starts, and now he's allowed four home runs.
Mm-hmm.
And that is really going to do it when you allow four home runs in three starts after allowing none in the first. And I think that that was one of the biggest factors, but I don't think his velocity's down. I don't think his placement has been like unfixable. I just think he was doing so well with it. He had a couple stinkers and they were all right next to each other.
It seems to me they're sitting on his off speed stuff, and he's hitting he's not hitting the spots he was early. He's a little bit more over the plate, from my opinion. And again, what does that mean? Who knows? But as Mike said, I don't think his velocity is down on the heater. I think that's a good sign. I think they need to probably get him to rely on the heater a little bit more now to, as an adjustment back to what teams are doing to him. But it's a push and a pull. Going to be for the young guy all year. He's a good pitcher. As long as he's healthy, he can get some stuff done. It's three bad starts, and really he only allowed four runs the other night. It's, I mean, it wasn't a great start, but it wasn't like he got,
it wasn't
off into Canada. You know, he'll be okay. Stay healthy, keep throwing, keep learning, keep adjusting. Chris Vetter needs to help him get through the rough patch.
Yeah, that was his start against the Brewers was a bummer on multiple fronts. The team that drafted him, I'm sure he wanted to pitch well against them, and then they were just a buzzsaw that day. I did want to put up this comment from Sean O'Toole because it's funny. Reese was doing a Quantum Leap episode with Pablo Lopez, and it's now starting to normalize. I thought Raj might like that because Quantum Leap. Oh, I have him muted. I have you muted, Raj. Well, he's laughing. He's laughing at Burris. Like, there, he's back. What's up? Is that the first you heard that?
No, I'm sorry. We make a Quantum Leap reference. You're automatically going to get something for me.
Yeah, I thought
one of my favorite shows of all time. That's
yeah. I figured you'd like that, so I threw you back up there. All right.
Oops.
Yeah. No, I think it's kind of Reese Olson is kind of the pitching equivalent of the sort of the point I was trying to make with Riley Green, right? Like this is a 24-year-old. He's not 25 yet. Fewer than 200 innings in the big leagues. He's been way better than I ever expected.
Well, yeah.
I thought he was a reliever. We talked about this a bunch. You saw him in Iowa. He was not good. So yeah. And getting to Mike's point, getting number three production, getting number four starter production. That's all great. Cause he's very young and he's inexpensive and, yeah, and you hope he'll figure it out. And even if he doesn't, then it's still a 3 or 4, 4.5 ERA, whatever. It's fine. So, yeah, that was. I think that was all that I wanted to touch on. I don't know if there were any pressing issues that you guys felt. I guess we could talk about Casey Mize. He pitched again today, and it was another, battle for him. Not a ton of swings and misses, but he keeps fighting. I don't know what else there's to say about him.
Well, do we want to go inside the numbers? Because that's my inside the number.
I think we should go inside the numbers then. And Raj will hit that, I believe. All right.
So these are homemade numbers calculated by me. Today, for a long time with Casey Mize, I know a lot of people are worried about the, how many swings and misses he generates, and I get it, no question. But today he was very competitive. He induced a lot of soft contact. It was a very, very nice outing. Everybody has to give him at least some credit, right? Good job. I mean, Shelby Miller lost the lead for him, but these things happen. What I've always thought about Casey Mize, and I've talked about this in the past, is he doesn't control the inside of his own knee. I always feel like if I was a major league hitter, I would feel very comfortable with Casey Mize on the mound. I would never be worried about anything. So I decided to try to watch every single pitch today, and I came close. I think I missed four pitches in the third inning. So if my numbers are off, it's because of those four pitches. But here's what I was looking for. I wanted to look for pitches inside that either made the guy bend his back out of the way or actually moved his feet. Okay? How could he make batters a little uncomfortable? In his six innings today, guess how many batters were forced to move their feet because of a pitch coming inside?
One?
Zero.
Oh.
I counted zero.
He's being Casey Nice.
He is very Casey Nice. He had two pitches where you can see me on camera here. He made the guy draw his hands in, but his feet never moved.
Mm-hmm.
So he kind of got a little bit, he kind of dabbled with it twice. And I think those are more pitches that just got away. It wasn't like he was trying to go in there.
Mm-hmm.
So I, 2-0 were my numbers. And I just think that it would make everything a little bit better. It wouldn't. I'm not saying this is a cure-all. But if he just would dust a couple people, doesn't mean he has to hit them, but get feet moving, make people feel just a iota uncomfortable. And I think we'd see a difference. Because right now, I've always thought this. It just would be a walk in the park to go up there against Casey Mize. You're never really afraid of getting hit. And with a 98-mile-an-hour fastball, there should be at least a touch of fear in everybody. And I would be shocked if anybody's afraid of Casey Mize.
All right. Mike, how about your inside the number?
Well, I hope this doesn't really make me sound like a homer. I'm not trying to say that I'm okay with this or not. My number right now is 3. That is the amount of games the Tigers are out of the wild card. I know it's June, okay? Just bear with me here. I listen to a lot of local radio, and I like to read. I read a lot about what people talk about, just our local sports teams in general, but a lot about the Tigers lately. And, you know, I read a lot of the comments. We may not feature all the comments that we get here, but I definitely go read through. I read through a lot of them. And everybody just keeps asking about, like, where the progress is. I think that it starts just by saying, and I know, just bear with me here. They're 3 games out of the wild card in June, and they're 2 games under 500. There's progress in that, but there's progress in that with the way that they're doing it. In that, I think that this year, if they do the exact same thing they did last year, if they go in and they end with the same record, was it 70? Oh my goodness, 78, 76, yeah. Somewhere around there. I think I feel more comfortable with it this year, and I'm not happy with it. I'm not saying I'm happy with that. Progress should be a direct number that you can see in the win-loss column, ultimately. But I think that if they do it in the same way this year, but they have all of these younger guys and they're trying more of this out, I feel like I'm okay with it is the wrong words. It's the wrong term, but I see it. I see what they're trying to do. And I feel like people need to understand that that's what they're trying to do. Whether you are okay with it or not, that is completely fine. And whether you agree with it or not, that's totally fine. But really, this is exactly what they said they were going to do, and they're doing it. And I know that seems so obvious, like, yes, they're doing what they're doing, but I feel like it's still worth pointing out that they, like, it seems crazy that I don't know, that Scott Harris told us this is exactly what was going to happen. Like, we really, and we're seeing exactly the way he said it would play out, you know?
Yeah, you know, I think the complaints I've heard is that, you know, that they didn't do enough in the offseason, and they just kind of expected Decentral to not be good. But I mean, to be honest, that's what everyone expected. Like, it's been a strange baseball year. Right now the Tigers have a better record than the Astros and the Rangers and the Rays. But Kansas City and Cleveland are just taking baseball by storm. Although Kansas City has come back a little bit, but still they're I think Raj sent me something earlier that they're on pace to have the biggest single season turnaround in, I don't know, 60 years, something like that. He sent 40 me games, right? Yeah, it's like 34 games, something like that. It's nuts. So that's just, I think part of that is a bummer, but yeah, I don't know. I agree with you, Mike, that it's very easy to lose perspective because the team plays such ugly baseball at times.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh my God, this is the worst thing I've ever seen. And then you look and you go, oh yeah, all right. Well, they're still kind of within shouting distance of this. They're a couple games behind the Red Sox, I think, who, you know, they split a series with. If you get hot for 2 weeks, you're in the playoffs. Like, go 9-3, something like that. It's just it's debatable whether or not they are capable of such things. There you go. Raj got it. Matching the 1903 Giants for the biggest year-to-year gain in history.
Wow.
And so, yeah, that's more than 60 years. It's 120 years. So my inside the number is also 3, but it's completely different. It's off the board. I just sometimes strange things pop up. And, you know, Raj and I pay a lot of attention to the minors, right? And something odd happened on Wednesday night in Toledo. The Mud Hens had 14 hits against Omaha, which is not necessarily super unusual, but it was kind of odd that they were all singles, not a single extra base hit. They also walked 8 times. They had one batter reach on an error, and they grounded into just one double play. So they had the 23 base runners in a 9-inning game, 2.5 base runners per inning, you know, minus the one double play. And I was kind of curious how often that has happened in Major League Baseball history. Like, you know, you can't search minor league game logs without, you know, doing it game by game, and nobody cares. But right. So I looked it up, and yeah, so 14 plus singles, 8 plus walks, at least one error, and one or fewer ground into double plays. And the answer is 3 in Major League Baseball history, games like that. The Pirates did it in a 12-6 win over the Reds in 1935. The Brooklyn Dodgers did it in an 11-6 win over the Reds in 1945. In the 1986, Braves did it in a 6-5 win over the Dodgers in 1986. The difference with the Mud Hens, they lost 7-5. So it's probably not the first time that's ever happened, but arguably one of the stranger games in Triple A history. And it just kind of goes by because you don't really notice it unless you dig into the numbers like that. And I just thought it was kind of odd.
They scored 5 runs. Oh, 5
runs with 23 base runners and only one double play. So, I mean, that's about as bad cluster luck as you can get. I mean, I saw when I was looking into that without, you know, some of the other modifiers, you saw somebody, you know, like 4 runs. But, yeah, very, very odd game.
Wheels Torkelson had 2 infield hits.
Yeah, he was batting second. Parker Meadows had 3 walks. It was, you know, I think Young took 2 walks. It was just a strange, strange circumstance. You would think with 2 runners on base in every inning,
yeah,
like at least a couple of more of those hits would bring some runs home. But that's just the way it goes. Sometimes baseball is very strange. So yeah, we those are our inside the numbers. I guess we can move on to the good and the bad and the ugly, unless anybody's got any. I don't know, Raj, did you do any segments? You can shake your head. I could no.
I did get some breaking news though. That so there was a post today from Corey Joyce, and this comes from Tigers Turmoil on Discord, who does the job combing the Instagrams. Mm-hmm. That basically, he's life lately, about a month ago, I was having some constant pressure around my eye and temple area, slight headaches here and there. So I went and got imaging. The MRI showed a lesion between my eye and my brain. And after the biopsy, they found what to be a rare blood condition that had created this lesion. I've seen many doctors over the last few weeks. They determined it was the only lesion I had. The location of the lesion is in a small bone in the skull. So we're exploring all options for treatment. Surgery is said to be very effective. So here we are a few days post-procedure. My surgery went much better than I anticipated. An incision along my brow extending onto my temple and my black eye, but no stitches, so it looks like it'll be healing nicely. I've had many doctor's visits and scans ahead of me, but I just wanted to say how grateful I am for the love and support of everyone around me. I couldn't imagine dealing this without the Tigers organization, the many doctors and medical professionals that worked on my case. It has been truly a blessing from the Lord. So, there we go.
You know, that's good to hear. I mean, obviously not good to hear about the diagnosis, but good to hear that hopefully there's some good things coming there. I feel bad that I didn't really notice that Corey Joyce wasn't playing a ton. I guess I should have noticed that. I know we noticed Christian Santana disappeared, but yeah, it's always a good reminder that it's, you know, baseball is just a game and all this stuff. Things get more serious. I know you've dealt with some things similar in your life, Raj, and yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, there's no, I'll say that I don't really, you know, honestly, outside of watching Tiger, the summary, the highlights and a little bit of the game here and there, I don't have too much of a number except, oh, I do have one number. I'm sorry.
Is it that, a Canadian number?
No. Although I did watch this in Canada, Kyle Schwarber moving up on the home run list all time, leadoff home run list. He's the 11th all time now. He had a home run in Boston, just majestic. So that was kind of cool because I didn't think that Kyle Schwarber was a leadoff hitter, but here we are. How much, yeah. I don't pay attention to the Phillies, but that's how good the lineup they are. So, all right, let's go in the. You guys are going into the good, the bad, the ugly.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
All right. Let's see. So you started inside the numbers. So how about Mike start with the good, the bad, and the ugly?
All right. Good. I need to say that I was wrong. When I started this show, I really came out with some hatred for one particular position group. It's a position group that people didn't really pay attention much to, especially offensively. And that was our catchers. It's been a pretty big proponent of what I talk about. I've been annoyed with our catching core. I've wanted more out of them. I think since I've been on the show, Jake Rogers heard me that very first day. And so my good goes to Jake Rogers. In the last 28 days, he's played in 13 games, 11 starts. He's got a .282, .317, .564 slash line. He's got 3 home runs, 2 doubles, 11 hits, 41 plate appearances. In the last 365 days, he's hitting .238, .289, .430. That's a .719 OPS. That's 107 games, 97 games started. So what I wanted to bring up by bringing all this up is that an acceptable slash line for a starting catcher? Because I looked at it and I was like, honestly, I give a lot of hate to Jake Rogers, but I think if I got that in a season to season basis, I think that that's acceptable. 18 home runs, .719 OPS. What do you guys think?
Oh yeah, I would say absolutely. I have a large area of forgiveness for catchers because, you know, just the other day I was thinking, like, how hard would it be to just catch the ball from a major league pitcher throwing 95 to 100 with 15 inches of horizontal movement and then a slider that breaks 3 feet and drops a foot. Like, I'm like, you know what? I can't even do any of that. So that they can do that for like 9 innings and then call a game and control the running game and game plan with the coaches beforehand and then go up and hit anything is amazing to me. So,
yeah.
But yeah, I mean, overall, I do think that would be a very solid production from catchers.
I think so too. And even a couple things, all that stuff you just mentioned, Chris, they also have a bat being waved in front of them on a lot of those pitches that they have to catch. And they're going through the whole summer wearing that gear. So, which ain't easy. So, I think that, you know, Jake Rogers has, if he could produce those type of numbers, that would be fine. I do think Dylan Dingler, though, is having a heck of a summer so far. He's earning a chance. The question I come to is, are they going to wait until there's an injury, or is he going to be able to hit enough where they feel they need to make a move of some kind to put him in Detroit? I don't know. I'd be interested what you guys think of that.
Yeah, I don't know. Part of me feels like that they would just wait for an injury because, I don't know, to the extent that there's, like, you know, pitcher catcher chemistry, They probably wouldn't want to mess that up at all. But I could see, you know, should things go south, you know, Carson Kelly could be. We see backup catchers get traded all the time in the trade deadline, usually for not much. You know, Alex Avila was part of a deal that brought back Paredes and Candelario back in the day with Justin Wilson. Teams will look for something like that if they need it. So I could see Carson Kelly get moved and Dingler come up in that scenario. Or Jake Rogers, I don't know. But yeah, I don't think they're going to bring him up just to be another bat. I think they want him. I mean, no matter how well he's hitting in Toledo, I think they still view his greatest value would be on defense. So
sure.
I don't know. But it's like you said, like if he keeps hitting, you know, you kind of force the issue at some point. I did want to chime in real quick because we got a donation here from Sean O'Toole. Thank you very much, Sean. $5. Oh, here comes, I think, Raj is hitting.
Thank you, sir.
He's going to hit something. What do we got? Which one is it? What's it going to be? Well, anyway, it's coming. He's trying. He's working. He's working on work with his left hand. He's working on sound bites with his right hand. Anyway, Sean said the good is Justin Henry Molloy. The bad is the bullpen. The ugly is we have no third baseman in the organization. Maybe.
Yeah, it seems like we have 30 first basemen from the last two shows we've done. That's all I've talked about is, oh, all these guys could be at first base. Maybe one of them at second base. Nobody really at shortstop or third base.
Yeah.
Well, shortstop in low A.
Yeah, you know, I do think it'll be interesting to see. Again, we'll talk draft a little bit down the road, but the way that they seem to target a lot of up the middle defenders in last year's draft, you know, theoretically, mostly, you know, up the middle, a couple of guys on the, you know, lower end of the spectrum,
right,
and hitters. So we'll see if they do that again. And wasn't uncommon for the Tigers to go after guys who were like corner outfielders or DHs coming out of college. I mean, Kristen Stewart says hello.
He sure does.
But all right, you continue.
All right. I've got my bad now. We kind of already got it.
Mike, continue. Yes.
Yeah. Nope. I didn't. We talked about Reese Olson a little bit. In his first 10 starts, he had a 1.92 ERA, 2.88 FIP. 47 strikeouts, 19 walks, 56 and a third innings pitched, 197 batting average against. He had 12 total earned runs. He looks like you could really start to trust him. You were thinking, hey, this guy could be great. His three starts in June, 14 and two-thirds innings, 17 earned runs. So he has more runs in his last three starts than he had the rest of the season combined. He has only four walks and 14 strikeouts, so the walks aren't up. The strikeouts aren't down, but with a 10.43 ERA. His batting average against is 0.412, so he's getting lit up just in every sense of the word. I mentioned earlier, and I'm just going to kind of echo it, I just think that this is a little bit of a hardcore regression of the mean, just almost to the extreme. We are seeing a guy who is not who is pitching probably over his head. If you stretch these stinkers out in between the rest of his starts, you'd say that he's having a really good year. So I don't think it's fair to look at these just because they all happen right next to each other. Now, if he gets two or three more all right next to each other, maybe two more, then I might start to worry. But we already hit mostly everything. I just want to bring it up again. I don't think that this is going to continue. I just think he's coming back down to earth a little. But with the ugly, I just wanted to, and I saw this on Tigers Minor League Report, Hau-Yu Lee took a 92-hour mile-an-hour fastball to the head earlier today and had to be taken out of the game. He's been one of the bright spots I've been reading. I don't remember
who it was. Altoona. What the fuck, man?
I can't bleep that out.
Oh! Sorry.
All right.
I didn't know he got hit in the head. That's news to me.
Just kind of right in the forehead area, like, yeah, actual like helmet, but not you know, not scores.
It seemed like he was okay. I will say he laid down on the ground for solid 30 seconds. It's not that he wasn't moving because you thought he was hurt that bad. I think he was just like, you know, processing everything. But this is the guy we got for Lorenzen. I think that he's I mean, I've seen a lot of things. You rate, you see 100 different ratings for the Tigers farm system. He's one of the reasons why their farm system is highly ranked. He's one of their solid guys, and just sucks. I feel like I bring up some sort of injury in every week in one of these, but that one was the one that sucked, and I saw it like while I was doing prep. I pulled up Twitter, and that was like one of the very first things, and I was like, well, shit, I know where to start.
Yeah, you know, I will say this, like we saw Roberto Campos get hit in the head the other day, and it's another one of the sort of organizational, and it might be every team now, but if you get hit in the head by a baseball in the game, they automatically take you out for precautionary reasons, even if it's a, you know, 75 mile an hour breaking ball that kind of glances off. They just want to make sure. They don't want to mess around with brain injuries. So, you know, yeah, like he looked okay. Hopefully they may give him tomorrow off. You know, most minor leaguers play five. I mean, at Double A, some guys will play six games a week, but a lot of guys will just play five times. So maybe that's his day off, and he'll come back and finish on Saturday and Sunday. But yeah, that's always, you don't like to see your position player prospects get hit in the head. Not ideal.
Exactly.
The good news is helmets are getting better. Mm-hmm. I think those injuries are a little less catastrophic than they used to be. And also, to your point, umpires get pulled now too when they get the bell wrong. They're out most, I would say, over 80% of the time. If they stop the game because of a hit to the head, that guy is probably done for the night. And they'll go to a three-man crew or two-man crew, depending on the level.
Yeah. Yeah. No reason to mess around with heads, you know.
Yeah.
I've seen some players, Justin Morneau dealt with, oof, it wasn't from a batted or a thrown pitch, but, you know, he had concussion issues for like two, 3 years.
Was it? Was it knees ahead?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
But, second, I mean, or something, or breaking up a double play or something.
All right, you know, Sean here.
Off the Frickers building.
There it is. Wait, you guys weren't hearing the drops I was playing before?
No.
What? So I have to be on.
I think you have to be on to play a drop. That makes sense. I mean, you could be in the seat, lurking in the background, drop bombing us. And
that sucks. Because I played I played that drop like three times.
Oh, well, no, it's all good. We get it.
Off the Frickers building.
Mm-hmm. Anyway. No, that was I think it was a slide. I think Morneau was sliding in the second, right, when that happened,
though? I think so, yeah. Yeah, that was and he's not the only one. I mean, I was talking to you about that old outfielder who couldn't stop running into walls.
Oh.
Jimmy Reiser, I think his name was,
That was a guy who, I guess, even in, like, for the Dodgers, who was considered by many one of the best outfielders in the late 40s, I believe it was.
Yeah,
Bump Bailey.
He had as much physical ability as just about any baseball player of all time, and couldn't stop running into the wall. Like he was taken off the field on stretchers like 14 times.
Oh my god,
it's absurd. Anyway, I don't know. We gonna move on to Youp's good, bad, and ugly.
Sure. Well, my good involves Spencer Torkelson, which hasn't happened much this year.
Oh.
And it might not be the best news for Spencer Torkelson, unfortunately, but I thought it was commentary today from AJ Hinch that really solidified my thoughts on it from last week when he was sent down. I tweeted about it a bit. Hinch pretty much put it out there. It's not about stats down here in Toledo right now. It's about him making substantive change. Because I think the worst thing they could have done with this whole thing with Torkelson, and I don't think it was ever the plan, was for him to go down, have a couple of hot series, hit six home runs, and bring him back. I don't think we would have seen a whole lot of change. You know, I think this needs to be a long-range plan where they get him swinging the way they want him to, and he needs to be open to it. Whether he is or not, we'll find out. A lot of people don't think he is, but, you know, we don't know that. We're not there every day. We'll see. The results will be out there for us to know in a couple of months. That's why I put the over under on him returning in late July, early August. I would be surprised if we see him before August 1st, to be honest with you. And I don't think we should. I think he should really take the time to make changes that will help his career along and do what the Detroit wants him to do and not worry about, you know, he's hitting 380 right now in Toledo. Again, he had a couple infield hits the other night, so who cares what he's hitting? Okay, I hit the ball hard. When he was here in Iowa last week, he hit some balls hard. That was fine. I know people on Twitter were like, well, they weren't fastballs. Well, okay. he can't apologize for that. He can only hit where people throw him. you know. But it's a matter of Detroit seeing change and him being the agent of change to get it done. I don't know what you guys see with in terms of a timeline for him coming back.
Yeah, I mean, I do feel like it's good to hear that they have certain things that they want. You know, they want him to make real change because whatever, you know, wasn't working. I assume that they have something specific for him to work on. I don't think they'd just be like, go down and change. So they want to see from, you know, old BK here in the comments said, you know, Torque was just interviewed and he didn't sound like a guy making major adjustments. I doubt that he, even despite his struggles, wants to make major adjustments. I think he thinks that he can get away with minor adjustments to get back on time. And he hit 30 home runs in the big leagues last year. So it's like hard to tell him like, no, you have to change everything because he knows that he can do it. It's I don't know. Like, you know, I'm sure getting sit down at AAA is a bit of a wake up call for him, but I don't think he feels like he's that far away.
Well, then he might be there a while.
Yeah.
You know, I'm sorry. You know, sorry, Spence. He might be there a while. He had 30 home runs, and that's fantastic. But he wasn't like he was a 30 home run MVP candidate either, okay? There was a lot of improvement he needed to make in his game.
Yeah, I mean, we all see that. But I try to put myself in his shoes and go, well, what I was doing last year, I hit 30 home runs in the big leagues, and not everybody can do that. But, yeah, I mean, you would hope that he wants to strive to get better, and hopefully we do see some real change in the next couple of weeks, and maybe he can come back and you know, before the trade deadline, and they can make a run. Who knows?
Well, and also, I mean, one thing I've always said, if they have a rash of injuries and they need to bring it back, that's fine. Okay? Yeah. That could change everything. But otherwise, I just think make him stay until – they like what they see, and he's improved his prospects of being a contributor to the lineup. My bad, you know, we already talked about it, so I'm going to change up a little bit. We talked about the game one against the Nats, so the defense. Well, the only thing I'll say to add to that is Hinch. You know, the game, how much does the manager play a role in what we perceive as sloppiness? Okay, because there has been some sloppy baseball in the field lately, not just that one game. Well, that one inning was that was an alarm bell inning, okay? Mm-hmm. Green booted one, Kreidler booted one, kind of a mediocre throw at best by Perez in the outfield. It'd be interesting to know how much communication there is on a weekly, nightly basis between Scott Harris and A.J. Hinch talking about those kind of mistakes. You know, because they need to get cleaned up. We'll see if it starts. We'll see if the offense, where the defense keeps trending. What I was going to replace that with is I love mock drafts. Uh-huh. Today, MLB Pipeline came out. The guy I've been watching, I've been talking about him a little bit on Twitter and here all spring, Cam Caminiti. That's the second mock draft he's been put on the Tigers. There must be some whispers among the Jim Callis, J.J. Cooper, all those kind of dudes, they must be hearing some stuff that Detroit likes that left-handed prep pitcher out of Arizona. The kid's got some stuff. I mean, they, you know, left-handed Jackson Job, we'll have to see. But I think that might be the Tigers' guy. We keep hearing a lot of whistles on that one.
This is very fortuitous because I have something about that too.
Okay, very good. And my last one then, I also changed out ugly for awesome.
All right.
Last night here in Iowa, my son, who some people have seen online and so on, my son's in a wheelchair. He has a form of epilepsy. He was invited by the Yankee Centennial Jaguars baseball team to throw out the first pitch. And the team welcomed him. They all came up and shook his hand and were giving him bumps, the whole deal. They took him out on the field. They helped him throw the pitch. He was out there with the team for the national anthem. It was really, really nice. They're doing that with a disabled child every home game this year. But the thing is, that's not all they've done. I took my son to the field day this year with his school, and it was all the baseball team was out there helping the kids with special needs. compete in their races and their events. That same baseball team that I show up for Miracle League, which my son plays in, they were there being the Angels. And evidently after being the Angels, helping all the kids around the bases, and they went to their coaches and said, hey, let's have someone come and throw this first pitch every game. So I just wanted to kind of put that out there that there are a lot of good kids out there. You know, this is all on them. You know, this wasn't, you know, some teacher forcing them to do it. Evidently, this has all been their thing. So pretty good group of kids at Yankee Centennial. Now, unfortunately, a kid named Joey Oki did not pitch last night.
Oh, yeah.
Joey Oki's ranked number 51 on Baseball America's draft list this year, their top 500. There's some buzz that he could go day one if he's willing to cut the right deal. So I was really hoping to see him pitch. Unfortunately, didn't, but I did see him play center field and make one hell of a catch. I mean, he sprinted a hell of a long way on a ball that was slicing away from him and reached out and got it at the last minute. You could just see the athleticism dripping off that kid. So good luck to Joey Oki next month in the draft.
Yeah, I mean, he's that's one of the things. He's not a huge kid. I think he's 6 feet tall, but yet the athleticism, I think, is really apparent. So that's cool. And that's awesome about the, you know, your son and the, you know, the good kids out there. I was doing field day activities and stuff all week too. I was serving ice cream to a bunch of fourth graders who were going nuts. It was yesterday we had a pool party all day at our house for the son, my son's last day of school. So it's nice. That time of year. I did, you know, I know you and your son, you're a big jersey guy.
Yes.
We had the Minnesota Twins City Connect jerseys that came out. And, you know, when Raj first told me about them, and he sent me a joke about they look like Best Buy uniforms. I don't know if he probably doesn't have the picture on hand or whatever, but he was correct. But what's interesting is then I then found out that, you know, one of my favorite rap groups, Atmosphere, they're from Minneapolis, had a part in, I don't know if they designed it, but they actually made like a short video to show the uniforms, which was kind of cool.
Yeah, that's cool.
I don't know what you thought about them.
You know, I like the jersey. I think they should have not gone with the monochromatic pants and the yellow belt. Don't love the belt.
Yeah.
But I like the jersey. I like the ripples. That's supposed to be like the land of 10,000 lakes, the water.
Yeah.
I don't mind the Minnesota logo. So I thumbs up on the jersey. I thought the hat was pretty cool. Didn't like the pants and the belt.
Yeah. They went State Connect instead of City Connect. But
yes, they did.
No, yeah, I don't know. It's Roger's right. He's got the Best Buy uniforms up there. It's the blue and yellow. I don't know if Best Buy is based out of Minnesota. I know Target was, right?
They are. I'm
not sure. Well, there you go. So there's the
home office is in St. Paul or Minneapolis. So that's the ironic part, because this is all day. As soon as I saw that connection, I started laughing my ass off because it is a total It very looks good. Like it to me. Look at the color scheme. You can't sit there. You know that the Best Buy was like, look, guys, everybody's shopping online. No one cares about us anymore. So here's a few bucks, and then people will think of us.
But they aren't part of the same company as Target, right? So
that's correct. Yeah, Target is a completely different company. Target
Field and Best Buy uniforms. That's gonna be real tough.
Target actually originally from Hudson, which was originally from here. So fun fact.
There you go. And then we've got Meyer on the jerseys here. Finally watching a live show from hello, Detroit Degenerate. Good to see you back again.
Yeah, good to have him back.
So I guess we'll move on to my good, bad, and ugly. I believe if we're all done there, my good, this just kind of went a little bit off the board, is Gavin Stone, who might not be a huge name to a lot of people. He's a pitcher. He's having a pretty darn good rookie year. But probably not getting quite as much notice because he's on the Dodgers. So there's that West Coast stuff. And also there's a fellow named Yamamoto, who's also a rookie, who's doing, you know, significantly better. But Gavin Stone is off to a very solid start to the season. I think he's with 7-2 ERA or 7-2 record, 2.93 ERA. So 1.3 WAR. He's basically, you know, pitching as well as Reese Olson for the Dodgers there. And it's just another instance of the Dodgers being so good at this. He was their fifth round pick in the 2020 draft out of Central Arkansas. Just a like nobody, you know, kind of a no name school. Nobody. Same round that Tigers got Colt Keith, and that was a strange draft, right? He had thrown four games for Central Arkansas before the season got shut down, and here he is. You know, their fourth best starter in the rotation, and just you know, more Dodgers being good. my bad. And here's where we go to the opposite of you. So my bad, and it's not even bad, really. This is it's just I just want people to remember where the information comes from. And it's you know, I love mock drafts. I love the baseball draft. I love it all. But about 80% of the information that comes out is from agents, and then like the other 20 is from people who see heavy hitters at games, and then tell their friends. And so by heavy hitters, I mean, you know, scouting directors, general managers, players, or, you know, presidents of baseball operations. Which brings us to Cam Caminiti. You were talking about this the other day. You talked about it today. He's been mocked to the Tigers a couple times. He was mocked to the Tigers in Joe Doyle's thing. He was mocked to the Tigers in a couple of these, MLB pipeline mocks.
Yep.
So, Yup is a Caminiti fan. I'm not so much. I'm a little bit worried about his ability to spin the ball. I watched his inning in the perfect game, All-American game last year, and did not see much of anything of a breaking ball. Now apparently this spring he's got a slider, he's got a curveball. They're both flashing. At least solid. So yeah. I haven't watched a ton of them, but I worry a little bit about somebody who you know, there's questions about the spin, because then you end up with Matt Manning. But there's no debate. Like it's athletic delivery. The fastball's in the mid 90s. He's got plenty of room to grow. He's young. There's a lot to like there. I don't know. But my whole point is, so how do we suppose this keeps happening, that he keeps getting mocked to the Tigers? Because he's a good prospect, but he's not like a lock top 15, top 20 pick even, right? It's high school pitching is always kind of iffy. So here's what I think. I think that Cam Caminiti pitches for Saguaro High School in Scottsdale, Arizona.
Yes, he does.
I think he pitched on May 15th. I think the Detroit Tigers had a day game in Detroit on May 15th. And I think they then went to Arizona for a three-game series. I think they had an off day on the 16th. I think perhaps some heavy hitters from Detroit decided to go a day early and see this kid pitch, because why not? You're going to be there anyway. And in Scottsdale, Arizona, roughly 25 minutes away from Chase Field, 20-minute drive, top prospect in the draft. Let's go a day early. Let's go see him pitch. I think that's what happened. And I think people saw Tigers heavy hitters there, and I think they said, well, the Tigers must like him. And maybe
yes!
Maybe they do. Maybe they don't. I don't know. The one thing I do know is they haven't told anybody that they're going to take him. So I'm just trying to want to remind people where this information comes from, right? Like it may be that they really love him and that they're there. Like I remember Kylie McDaniel saw Al Avila at a Parker Meadows game in high school, and so mocked Parker Meadows to the Tigers because, well, Al Avila was there. And wouldn't you know it, the Tigers took Parker Meadows. So it's possible. It's also possible that the front office is just doing their due diligence and they were going to be in the area anyway, and so they wanted to see the kid.
Just fair warning, though. Joe Doyle talks to agents all the time.
No.
Joe Doyle works for agents in some way, shape, or form. I'm not saying it to be blasphemous. It's just a fact. So take it for what you will. Yeah.
That's what makes it fun.
It makes it fun, but I just wanted to chime in on that because, that logic. It's just pure 100% logic. It's like watching an episode of Psych sometimes with like some of these. I know I'm making an obscure reference, but it's just common sense. If you're seeing somebody out there, if you're seeing Scott Harris at a baseball game, he must be interested in some player there. Who knows? That's, you know, and like first, the Tigers have scouted Arizona very well. That area out there, you have that, the West Coast side of things. You have Wilmer Flores was scouted at a school out there. Spencer Torkelson.
Bobrisky.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. Bobrisky was the other one. I couldn't think of it. That Scooble. I was talking more like the Southwest. Yeah, but
Scooble's from Arizona, but yeah, he's pitching up in Seattle.
He's pitching up in Seattle. But no, but it's one of those things where there's good scouting out that way. But yeah, it's to me, it's just like, well, that's the red herring. They're there. Well, Chris just totally debunked it. You know what? Come on. We're the Mythbusters here.
I wouldn't say debunked it, right? It's just one of those things. Like, you can only glean so much from a guy, you know, people being there watching a guy play. And maybe there were, you know, other people sitting next to him, and Scott Harris or whoever was there, Mark Connor, was like, oh my God, this kid is amazing.
Yeah.
And they're like, all right, I'm going to write that down.
Or but maybe they went to the high school game because they have really good walking tacos. I don't know. Yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, from...
Well, I just think that if there are organizations out there which we who are ranking him as the top prep pitcher this year, if you can get that kid at 11, that's not the end of the world to me. You know, I know there are a lot of folks out there, some folks who are commenting, who don't want any part of another prep arm. And I get it. You know, we need the Tigers need bats. But at the same time, I go with the talent. If they really think he's the number one high school prep arm, I won't argue with it.
Yeah. So yeah, and I'm gonna mention this right here. You know, Ray McConnell said, "No way the Tigers draft another pitcher with their first pick." I wouldn't be so sure, honestly. Like, what Yoop just said, this is not considered a particularly strong draft overall. There are, you keep hearing like, oh, they're like 8 to 10 players that are kind of a consensus top of the draft, and then after that, it's a little question mark. And some guys are moving in a little bit, some guys are moving up. But there is a belief, I think, among some, because high school pitching has, over the last decade or so, has become kind of, no bueno. People don't even like, there are certain organizations that just won't draft a pitcher in the first round. They may give a pitcher first round money in the second round or, you know, comp round or whatever, but for whatever reason, they think the risk is too high. But, you know, there's always that, you know, kind of crazy like a fox zag when everybody is zigging. If you think that the best potential value, the highest ceiling in this draft is coming from a prep pitcher and you don't necessarily love any of the other options there, who knows? Maybe you can go for it. Maybe even get a haircut on a deal because the other teams aren't necessarily there and try to, you know, mold your draft that way. I actually like some of the pitching, a little like the pitching depth in this draft in the high school class. But you know, you never really know who's going to turn out great. It's tough to tell.
Yeah.
Everybody wants bats. We always want bats. We get it. They took a lot of bats last year. They took McGonagall. They took Clark. They took Max Anderson. You know, they still took pitchers, and you know what? Jaden Hamm has been one of the better stories in the, out of that draft so far. So, you know,
Tiger's second pick is 37 overall, correct?
I thought it was 42, something like that.
Well, and I think last year was 37. McGonagall.
Yeah, I think they have 42, 40, something like that, and then 71. I want to say.
I wonder if you know Caminiti. If his number is high enough, he can work something out with him. The second pick.
He's an LSU commit. So is William Schmidt, the top right-hander in the draft, who arguably has the best breaking ball in the draft. He's kind of the Jackson Job profile. If you float a bonus up high enough, I still think that he'll probably go somewhere in that first round. It's just you never know, though. There's always one or two pitchers every year. They end up falling. Who was it? Cam Johnson, I think, was a highly thought of high school pitcher last year that ended up not getting drafted and going to LSU. And I think he's already transferred because he didn't pitch much. That's one of the issues with going to college sometimes is they're not gonna let you figure out your control issues at college. Those games matter. So if you can't throw strikes early on, then that's not necessarily great. So
yeah,
right. Tigers have 11, 49, and 72.
49, okay. I thought it had been lowered a little bit, but...
this is just according to MLB. I don't know.
No, that's probably right. So, yeah, that's about right. That's 49 would be their second-round pick because they have a comp B competitive balance round B instead of A. They had A last year. Anyway, So I will move on to my ugly, which is, I don't know, we kind of touched on it earlier, but it's the Tigers' defense in June. Not quite halfway through June, but it's been a pretty ugly month so far. They're, particularly on the infield, they're just negative one about outs above average overall on defense in June, but negative four on the infield. And, you know, we're only 2 weeks in, which is tied for the third worst in baseball so far in June. And the big culprit is, unfortunately, Colt Keith, who is negative three all by himself. Mark Canha has the other, you know, negative. And, It's a bummer because, you know, he came out this year and we're like, hey, you know, this, he's pleasant surprise on defense, playing better than we all expected. And again, this is to Mike's regression. I think he's now reverting a little bit to kind of what we expected from him originally, which is, you know, not going to be the best defender at second base. Of course, it coincides with his offense picking up a little bit, although he hasn't been terribly hot lately. But it's just a bummer. that, again, we have to do all this consideration for guys who might not have a real position to play right now. And it's been ugly, and it's been the cause of at least one loss. We talked about it, and probably more than that this month. So
no question.
Got to clean that up. And that's what you were talking about earlier. It's like, you know, does AJ Hinch come into the locker room and scream at guys to play better? I don't think so. I think he's the sort of guy who just expects – it's not that they don't work on defense. You see it all the time before every game. And I don't know what you do when you're a manager. You expect guys to show up and make the plays and play smart baseball, and then they don't. I don't, like, Colt Keith didn't play today. He didn't get used as a pinch hitter either, I don't think, after they took the left-handed starter out. So maybe that's like, hey, you're not playing great on defense. You're going to sit today. Who knows? But it's been, you know, it's been kind of ugly, and they got to clean it up.
They've had a couple ugly rundowns, you know.
You know, that one game in Texas where it was, you know, miscommunication between Riley Green and Zach McKinstry, and the ball drops, and that, you know, puts an earned run on Tyler Holton's ERA, and Jason Foley has to come in. Like, that, all that adds up. Mm-hmm. Like, it didn't cost them the game, but now Foley has to come in, and all that stuff. It's just, you gotta clean it up. And I get it. They're playing with kind of, you know, Baez is out, Torkelson is out. They don't have Meadows out in center field. Like, it's not the ideal defensive lineup they wanted to start the year, but you're big leaguers. You got to figure it out.
Yeah.
Well, that was it for my segments. I don't know. A lot of people are talking about the draft there in the chat. I don't know if we want to get into any more. We kind of touched on.
I've looked at Cam and Eddie a lot, but the one who sticks out to me offensively is Bryce Rainier. Mm-hmm. The high school shortstop. You know, I like the reports that, you know, at one of the I don't know if it was a perfect game event, but I forget which, it was one of the big showcases. Five hardest hit balls of the week, Bryce Rainier. I mean, the guy's got power. So, you know, some of the video you can find on him, he looks like the real deal. I mean, everything you read is great. He's in the top 10 of a lot of mock drafts. Can he fall to 11? I think that would be the guy that really interests me.
Yeah, he was a pop-up, not a pop-up, I should say. He was a riser, right? And it felt for a while that, like, hey, he might get to the Tigers, but you keep seeing him in the top 10 now. It's you hope somebody falls. Like, this reminds me a little bit of the year they took Young, where Young, I don't think, was projected to fall to where the Tigers took him. He was generally considered going to go a little bit higher, but I don't remember. You know, Kumar Acker kind of threw everything off in that draft, as I recall.
I was so disappointed.
But, I don't know. I mean, I like Rainier. I think fans would be very happy with that, you know, taking a big left-handed hitting shortstop who gets comparisons because he's a big left-handed hitting shortstop, gets compared to Corey Seager or Colson Montgomery. You're like, yes, fans would love that.
The people who still miss Marcelo Meyer will.
Yeah. Yeah, the Marcelo Meyer factor. Yeah. You know, there's a swing that I love, and I think Raj likes this kid too, or at least he sent me something about him, you know, a month ago. Is a kid named Slade Caldwell. I just really like his swing. It reminds me of Kevin McGonigal a lot. He reminds me of Kevin McGonigal a lot as a player. He's smaller. It's a short, quick swing. He plays with a ton of aggression. He's got above average speed. He's a center fielder. The question is, like, you know, how much pop is there? But I just, you know, like, I was joking in our Discord. It was like, you know, he's a McGonigal. Build the whole plane out of McGonigals. Just give me 9 kids who can hit like that kid, and we'll be all right.
Figure it out. You bet.
So there's here's a little Rogers put up video of Slade Caldwell. It's slow motion. It's kind of hard to – I think he's hitting ground balls left and right here. But, it's just, you know, but you see him – you'll see him around 20 in a lot of mocks. You don't see him nearly as high as the Tigers. But, you know, for me, I'm like, just take the people who can hit. Now, as people are saying in the chat, like, you know, if James Tibbs is there, that's fine. You worry, again, that's another left fielder, first baseman, DH type, and – the Tigers are flush with those, but yeah, if you want hitters, go out and get hitters. But you see, there's a good video right there. That swing.
That was a swing that I really, really liked. It was just a quick, it, like, barrels it up pretty quickly there. And that makes for, especially for the Tigers right now, they have good contact hitters like McGonigal who can grind out at bats. And yeah, as you were just saying, you know, give me a feel of McGonigal's, I'm fine with it. But
yeah. McGonagall's all the way down. I will. I know we're probably wrapping up here, but I did want to throw out one thing, and this is kind of, you know, just off the board, but we keep talking about what the Tigers. We don't keep talking about, but we've talked about what the Tigers might do in the offseason to address some holes next year, and I wonder what you guys think of Ha-Seong Kim. Because he has a mutual option with the Padres, and he's making like $8 million a year. So I don't think he's going to take that. And he's a 28, 29-year-old. You know, there's never been a ton of power there. But he walks, and he's not hitting for a high average this year, but he walks. He plays good defense. He doesn't strike out. He steals bases. And you could put him wherever you need to in the infield. He can play second. He can play shortstop. He can play third. I'm curious, you know, who knows how much money he would get, but I wonder what you guys think about him as a player for the Tigers.
I like the guy a lot, you know, followed him since they brought him over. The fact that he can play every position mitigates some of the, you know, if they keep Baez around, you know, or they get rid of him. Either way, they can find ways to use Song. So, yeah, I mean, they're, you know, the free agent market this year, we're going to see what's out there. But if he were one on there, if he was willing to come to the Midwest, I think that would be, he's the kind of guy you think AJ Hinch would want to be able to use, right? Multiple positions and the whole deal.
Yeah. That's, we talk about there's utility players and there's the futility players, the Ryan Rayburns of the world who have to move around cause they can't play anything well. But he's a legit guy. You can move around and probably going to play good defense everywhere. Now, again, it's limited impact with a bat and people want hitters. But I don't know, given what we've seen this year from the infield, particularly infield defense, like I was just talking, I was like, you know, that might not be the worst option in the world. But, you know, it always comes down to money and years and what he would, you know, like you said, would he want to come to Detroit?
I mean, that would be the replacement for, I mean, maybe he'd play a little more than Zach McKinstry, but they kind of use Zach McKinstry as like kind of put him in the infield wherever they want. If he could play, I mean, I'm just saying, he's an upgrade over Zach McKinstry, I think, which I think if people are looking for big splashes, that's not what they're going to want. But what I'm looking for is simply the bench guys. I want the bench guys to be better, not only to be able to push any starters, but just raise the overall talent level. So I think that would be a great pickup. That's great.
I think you probably like him more than Urshela, too, right? I mean, he picked Urshela's time.
I mean, Urshela's on the 1 year deal, River, so he'd be gone, and I don't think they'd bring him back. And yeah, I don't know. It was a name that I thought about, and people have talked about trading for him before. And like I said, it's not a terribly sexy name because he doesn't put up a ton of power. It's like 15 home run power, but he really does control the zone. It's a lot of walks, not a lot of strikeouts. It's kind of puzzling that his average is so low. Maybe he's just trying to launch when he hits the ball, but. I don't know. Yeah, like you said, like just a name. You bring him in as your third baseman or second baseman if Keith moves to first. And then if Javi goes, and he's your shortstop. I don't know. Just a name to throw out there. Somebody did ask Kevin, and this was Kevin asked, how is Chase Young defensively looking at third base? That was my bad, possibly my ugly last week. I don't remember if that probably is all you need to hear. But Yes, Raj popped in right there with the Price is Right. It's not going great. We got to, you know, give him a little bit of grace because he's changing positions here in AAA. But there's a lot of errors. It's not terribly smooth. He just looks like he's too sped up at third base, and I don't think it's going to work.
I think the biggest thing for him sometimes is that lateral movement. Like I think it's because he's so used to playing second base. Not that he can't. It just sometimes looks a little stiff going to the left, more toward the left than the right, at least in my opinion, going left to get to more towards like the line. He has a what I notice sometimes he struggles playing the line a little bit.
Yeah.
Third.
Yeah. And it's a different position, you know, like it's the hot corner, right? Cause you're getting screaming line drives there a lot and you know, little choppers if coming on. And second base is a little bit different. You're getting hard contact there, but it's not the same as it is in third base. And he's a quality second baseman in the minors. I still think he would be below average overall in the big leagues because he's just slow footed. There's no other way to get around it. He's got a, you know, he's a thick lower half, and not a quick first step, but he makes the plays at second base. At least he did all throughout the minors. It's just third base is a different animal, and I don't think he's quite built for it. So fortunately, I don't think he's the answer there. So I don't know. I mean, that was my, oh, John's aunt. Hi. Hi, John's aunt. Well, thanks for coming on. We, you know, we're just about wrapping up right now, but very happy to have anybody join us. I don't know if you guys have anything else to you feel like discussing. We've got Tigers heading off to Houston, right?
Houston should be a good series. You know, they're certainly having a very rough year, highly unexpected, but they still show up with some dangerous hitters, you know, and with the way Detroit's starting pitching has been a little iffy lately. I mean, you just wonder what Maeda is going to do against them. You know, you wonder with Flaherty coming back from his back issue, does he have a six-inning start in him? And then you got to hope that, you know, Skubal is the rock and can at least, you know, plant the flag in the ground for that one game. They walk out of there with at least one win. But, you know, if Flaherty, if his back is okay, there's no reason they couldn't win two games.
Yeah, so the Tigers kick off with Skubal against Brown on Friday. That's an 8 o'clock start, 4 o'clock start on Saturday. Flaherty with his getting a shot to his back against Verlander. And on Sunday, it will be Maeda against Arrigetti.
Arrigetti, Spencer.
Arrigetti.
Yeah. Although I did hear rumors that Houston signed Trevor Bauer. Is that true? I saw some on Twitter.
Yeah, I don't think that was true. I think it was just a troll.
Okay.
Yeah, that was
It doesn't look like it. I mean, with the Braves are kind of playing crap baseball right now, and that's who the Tigers are playing right after Houston. And I don't know. I think that this is a prime. You're playing these guys at the right time. So, I mean, but I've been saying this for weeks that they look like they're in prime position to win a couple series, and they played themselves in the Washington Nationals and they lost that series. So,
oh, you're right. It's about when you play some of these teams in Atlanta, you know, Acuna's out and they got some pitchers hurt and they're trying to plug in some rookie pitchers and they're kind of finding their way. So you could be right, Mike. I mean, this could be the great time to waltz into Atlanta.
Yeah. Especially because I can never say his name right. Alex
Bregman.
No. The Braves GM.
Anthopoulos. Sorry.
Anthopoulos. He just recently, he was just on with Valley Sports. And I mean, I think there's some, here's some things. I mean, I think there's some things there might be changing in a little bit, but he was kind of implying that.
He basically said, we suck right now. And well, I think that's what he used those exact words.
No, I was just going to say what he here's the exact quote was. We're all going to do everything we can, players, coaches, R&D. Everyone is doing what they can. I mentioned this maybe 10 days ago. I'm active with trade calls, and nothing is imminent. I've been more active than I have been in the past. We haven't gotten any traction on anything, but from talking to other GM, general managers, it seems like everyone's dealing with offensive struggles. Does not make us feel any better. We're continuing to look and getting our own team playing well and see what we can come up with. End of quote. He's pissed, in other words. But he also called out, I mean, he, I don't want to say called out, but here's a quote that stands out. Seems like that ball Sean Murphy hit last night should not have been gone, and you should be leaning that much of the things, but over a course of 162. When you're grinding and trying to get things going, they weigh on you a little more. In other words, he's pissed. I'm just going to keep saying that again.
It has been really odd. Like Austin Riley is not doing much. Matt Olson is not doing much. Like you said, Acuna wasn't doing much before he got hurt. It really is. It's strange.
Mediocre.
You know, I half-heartedly said earlier, like, you know, I wonder if the Braves would like Mark Canha. You know, a veteran, solid offensive player. They could put in the outfield, play at first base. I don't think they'd hate it. They don't have a ton to give. They do have a kid I kind of like named Ignacio Alvarez, goes by the name Nacho, which you can't beat that, right? Nacho Alvarez. I think he's more of a glove first guy, maybe shortstop, third base, but I don't know. I wouldn't, you know, you get him for Canha, I'd be okay with that.
Yeah, anything. I'm very pro Nacho.
Yes, yeah. As am I. As anybody who comes and watches a baseball game with me, you're going to see me Me and Nacho hanging out.
Yeah. Nacho's delicious. So, but all right. So on that note, thank you so much for listening to the Tigers ML Report. Tigers, wow. Motor City Metrics podcast. But like I said, came back flying in or driving in from Toronto. I am burned out and I still have a PowerPoint. I still have 16 slides left to go. So
you got this. The,
yeah. That's why we take donations. So I don't have to do this day job anymore. So so go to our, again, go to our PayPal account. It's a link down our Twitter bio. It's a link down our TigersMLReport.com. And there's so many ways you can help us out. We appreciate listening. Keep it classy. And we'll see you Monday for the week 13 podcast. Wow, week 13. Sorry, week 13 weeks of the minor league season. We'll be out at West Michigan on Saturday. Check out Jaden Hamstart, more likely. And also, happy Father's Day for anybody who has a whatever role they play in a child's life, male, however see fit. Hopefully, you have a good Sunday. Have a good weekend, everybody. And we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, everyone.
Bye-bye.